Attention Austin musicians and music industry professionals. Are you having a difficult time navigating these tricky waters? Well, the Austin Music Foundation is here to help you. The Austin Music Foundation is a nonprofit dedicated to strengthening and connecting the local music community with innovative programs that empower musicians, music industry professionals, and music businesses within Austin's creative economy. With expert panels, consultations, mentoring, and mixers, AMF's programs provide the necessary tools and opportunities to help the Austin music industry succeed. Now look, ever since COVID took over last year, everything's moved online. The consultations are online. They're at no cost to the artist or to the music industry professional. Just go to austinmusicfoundation.org. That's austinmusicfoundation.org to find out how they can help you. Austin Music Foundation is here to help. Let's get down. Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. I had a really good weekend. If you listen to the show on Friday, you know I went to Houston on Tuesday to play a show with Skyrocket, play the VIP preview night of the Houston Auto and Boat Show, where there was like open bars and free food the night before it opened, and people could come look at the 2023 bright orange or 2024 bright orange, whatever, 2023? Is that what's coming out now? I don't know what's coming out now. A million cars, a million boats. They can go there, walk around among the different car people, ask them questions about the Bugatti, the Lamborghini, the Ferrari, the Toyota Camry, the Honda Accord and Civic. I looked at the model of my car. That is the latest model, which is the Mazda CX-9. And the new one's like a fucking space shuttle or something, man. I was blown away. Anyway, I had a great week with my family. It was great getting to spend time with my grandma, my aunt, my cousin Emily came down. And we just had a really nice family time. It's nice getting to spend time with family. I will say that. My grandma's going to be 100 in May. It's crazy, right? I mean, it's super old. So any time that I get to spend with her, just like hanging out, having coffee, watching stupid movies, it's great. So yeah, it was great. Saturday, Skyrocket played at this yacht club in the Clear Lake area for this thing called the Commodore's Ball, whatever that means. I guess it's the president of the yacht club or something. It's actually a naval ranking. I ended up looking it up on Sunday morning to see what it was that I'd done the night before. I didn't know. Wow, my fridge makes weird noises. Anyway, that was a lot of fun. It was a long show. Like the dinner ran late and the event sort of ran late. And we were the last thing that came on. And so what ends up happening during those times is your breaks get cut off. So we ended up playing about 9:30 to 12:30. So about three solid hours, maybe a little bit before 9:30 we started. It was pretty intense, man. I felt pretty wiped out on Sunday. Came back to Austin with Rosie, got back to the apartment. It's nice to be home. I miss my family. It was really nice to spend time with them, but it is nice to be home. It's freezing cold here now. Rosie's not having it. We went, I have like three podcasts today. So we went to PetSmart this morning and picked up a couple of new toys so that she could have some shit to play with while I do all this stuff. So yeah, it was a great weekend overall. I hope you guys had a great weekend. Gang, I want to let you know that this Friday, February 3rd, Skyrocket is playing in San Antonio at Sam's Burger Joint. Great place to see the band. Great time. If you live in San Antonio, come on out and see the band. It's a great time, I promise you. Look us up at skyrockettheband.com. That's this Friday, February 3rd. Skyrocket, Sam's Burger Joint, San Antonio. Great place to play. Hey, gang, I have a great show for you today. I do Houston-based underground music collective, The Wheelworks. Just put out a brand new album, Harbor. They just put it out at the end of last year. Fantastic, gorgeous, gorgeous record. Super cool record. Like, I don't know. This band's amazing. Like, they're very, very cool. I talked to their leader. Since it's a music collective, there has to be like one guy that's always in it. It's usually the guy that sings, writes most of the music, and writes all the songs and stuff. But I have a fantastic conversation with their leader and original member, Stephen Higginbotham. Fantastic conversation. This record's gorgeous, man. You can go back and look up their other records too. Really, really great records. Their last record, Post Truth, great record. Loaded with lots of sort of that 2018 sort of vibe of politics that was going on and really kind of like fighting back. The band formed in 2020 and has been in Austin and now is just simply based in Houston, but they are on tour right now for this record, Harbor, which you can find on Bandcamp or wherever it is you stream music. You can find them at thewheelworks.com. But they're on tour right now. They just played Lake Charles, Louisiana, doing some different stuff around Texas, and they will be here this Thursday, February 2nd in Austin at the Mohawk. Get out there and check it out. As I said, go to thewheelworkers.com. Fantastic, really fucking great band, cool band. I'm going to go see them on Thursday, by the way. I don't know if I told you that. Saturday, February 4th, they'll be at the 101 in Bryan, Texas. And on Friday, February 17th, they'll be at the Continental Club in Houston. Go to thewheelworkers.com. Stephen Higginbotham and I have a great conversation about how he came to music, how he the band kind of started in Austin and ended up moving down to Houston when he moved down there, and how he went to law school and got his lawyer business together and how he's doing that now, but also doing the music. The record was produced by a guy that I've known and has been on the show a long time ago. I think back in like 2012 or 2013, producer and former studio owner Dan Workman is a co-producer of this record. And the record was mastered by my dear old friend, Dave McNair. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversations with Wheel Workers, frontman and founder, Stephen Higginbotham. Let's get down. So, dude, this record Harbor is fantastic, man.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Can you tell me, I know you write all the lyrics and stuff, but how does the songwriting in a music collective work? Like how does that work?
I'm sort of the director musically, but there's a lot of different people that contribute. So for some of the songs, I bring the initial idea, so I'll have like the chords and maybe the vocal melody.
Yeah.
And, you know, but for other songs, you know, we'll have like improvisation, jam sessions, you know, where we'll have the main band members that currently perform live, or in other instances, they'll, you know, just be friends who will come in who have, you know, played a few shows with us, but have since moved on. You know, or, you know, people who used to play live with us regularly, but, you know, moved out of town or something, but came in just to, you know, work or just have some fun during a jam session. And I record a lot of those sessions, and I'll find kind of like the little diamond in the rough idea where everything came together and sort of build out a song from that. So those are the two main ways. You know, sometimes I'll come with an idea and then other people can collaborate, and I kind of guide that process. And then other instances, you know, something spontaneous will happen while we're all just in a room together. And then I kind of take that and build it out from there.
All right. Okay, well, that seems, it's in my mind, that seems how it would work. And let me ask you another thing. When you started this band like 20-something years ago, did it start off as a loose kind of collective like that, or was it more?
It was more of a traditional band. Yeah. We, a lot of us met in Houston, but then went up to Austin and kind of formed an official band that started playing out in shows and so on. And that original lineup was highly collaborative. We all lived together. We were in our, you know, early to mid 20s. It was one of those situations. Yeah, it was a little crazy at times, but it was also highly prolific and, you know, a really formative time for me as a musician, spending that much time doing music, you know, all the time. And but that initial group started to disperse, and I wanted to keep it going, so I moved back to Houston after I graduated from school, and
Where'd you go, UT?
Started up. What's that?
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Texas State.
Okay, cool.
Texas State. San Marcos, and started up the project again with some new members, but a lot of the original members kept contributing. They didn't necessarily play live regularly, but they would come in and, you know, do a guitar part, or they would come in and, you know, write a bass line, or come in during a jam session and Right. Who knows, you know, come and do various things. And I always considered them, you know, very close musical collaborators. There were a few where there was some lingering tensions from, you know, various things that came up, but a lot of that has dissipated over the years as our egos have
mellowed,
become less prominent, and, you know, we've matured some. And so I'm on really good terms with all those original members. And in fact, Harbor was more kind of the more modern lineup. But the next record probably is going to have a lot of some of the original members contributing, because we had a bunch of stuff that was almost done. Then we broke up, and a lot of those songs, I mean, there was like 20 songs or more, were never totally finished. So we're in the process of combing through some of that and resurrecting some of that material that never was complete. But then there's completely new material that's being developed also. So, and a lot of different people are involved. So I feel, you know, very lucky to be able to collaborate with so many amazing musicians over the years.
Right. Yeah, man, you really have. Like, that's, it's interesting going through all of these records. Let's talk a little bit about Harbor first. That video for SOS is great.
Yeah.
Who did that?
Yeah, the artist, Thibaut, we know her as Tracy. She is someone that our current keyboardist, Aaron Rodgers, was close with. And Aaron has her own projects that are excellent. One of them is called National Pleasure. And they did a music video for that project that I was very impressed with. There's also another local Houston band called Swimwear Department that is a really, really cool kind of punk, Devo keyboard, really amazing live show. She did a music video for them as well. And I was very impressed with that. So I reached out to her, and she's done pretty much all the art for this album.
Oh, from great. Its yeah, the album cover is great.
To the album cover, and we just actually submitted the album art and everything for the vinyl version. So each version is going to be each medium is going to be a slightly different art associated with it. And you know, and she's actually working on a music video for the song Harbor, the title track.
Yeah, yeah, right. Song too.
Her work on SOS was amazing. I was extremely happy with that. I think she's got a very unique and compelling visual style.
Yeah. And is that obviously this song has some sort of like ecological message in it, right?
Yes. From time to time, the band, and I write the lyrics, so me, I have socially conscious aspects.
Sure.
It just seems like, you know, between everything that's happening politically, and then with the pandemic and, you know, technology, and there's a lot of things that are accelerating and have a kind of a feeling of being out of control. And it just, sometimes it seems like humanity could use some help. So the idea is sending an SOS out to, you know, maybe intelligent life that can give us a little guidance. And, at the very, very end of the development of the song, I had the idea of using the golden record from the Voyager missions that was included, that had the greetings to intelligent life recorded. And you know, a bunch of different languages. So I added that at the end of the song, and I felt like that was a nice way to finish up the song.
Yeah. So. That's always just in case the aliens speak French. You never know what you're going to come across out there.
Exactly.
Bonsoir.
You never know. Yeah.
Let me ask you, I went through your record, the last record, Post Truth, today, and I was thinking to myself, like, some of those songs are pretty hard hitting political songs. There could have been a good George Santos song. You're like, shit, man. I wish that guy would have come around in like 2017.
Yeah, I mean, stranger than fiction, for sure. He's a unique character. Yeah, it's just, but I mean, in some ways, it's, you know, kind of epitomizes modern politics.
Yes,
it does.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter who you are as long as you're, you know, in my tribe. You know,
yeah.
Things become so polarized. We'll vote for anything as long as it's not the other side. So yeah, it's absurd.
Crazy times.
But yeah. Post Truth, that was an album that was in a lot of political songs anyway. It was kind of sort of my reaction to Trump and everything he represented.
Yeah.
It was just culmination of this, you know, this plainly incompetent psychopathic narcissist, but you know, he trolls the other side and makes them crazy. So that's our guy, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it was, you know, post-truth. The truth doesn't matter. George Santos, exactly.
No, and all
doesn't
kinds
matter.
It's funny because all of that, and it was also accelerated then in 2020, where there's, you know, everything from horrible messaging about a pandemic and misinformation about a pandemic, and then people just, yeah, I have a sister that buys into that stuff, and she basically gets all of her information from Instagram stories from her friends. And so she was telling me, she's a heavy smoker. She smokes about a pack and a half of cigarettes a day. And she got a cold like a month ago, and she hasn't really been able to shake it. And she called me a couple of days ago, and she was like, you know what I think it is? I think it's this vaccine. And I'm like, dude, quit smoking and your colds will go way faster, I promise. All right, so let's get back to Harbor. You did this record with a dude I really like, Dan Workman. I actually did one of these backstage at House of Blues before a gig I played there with him.
Oh, yeah, he's been a close collaborator and friend for a long time. I first reached out to Dan. We have a record called Unite, I think,
right.
Came out in 2011. And I sent a few songs from that just kind of out to different people that I respected, and he really connected with some of the songs. And while that album was done, he had a record label at the time called Zen Hill Records, of his friends. We joined that label for a while. And then we put out our next record, Past to Present, and that one was done in collaboration with Dan. And ever since that time, I worked closely with Dan because he's a great human being, and has a really great sense of just how to craft a good song, and he's helped us in terms of production and in terms of mixing the records. And I think, honestly, our collaboration has grown with each record, and I feel like this most recent record is, you know, the best sounding yet. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm old friends with Dave McNair, too.
Oh, yeah, he's done our records since Past to Present, and he's a really good guy.
Yeah.
I've had conversations with him. So.
Yeah. He's not living here, right? Isn't he in, like, North Carolina or something?
No, He was in Houston for a little while,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I think he moved, I don't know, about 5 years ago. For some reason New Orleans is coming to mind, but that could be wrong.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly where he's.
For some reason, I remember talking to him one time and he was in North Carolina. I don't know if he was just there visiting.
That could be it. Yeah, that sounds right.
So are you from Houston?
I am. Born and raised in Houston.
What part of town were you growing up in?
The part that was just hit by those tornadoes, like Pasadena, Deer Park, Pearland, kind
okay.
of junction of those areas. I grew up in those areas, formed my first bands in those areas. Still have a lot of friends. I still live in that area, actually.
Yeah.
But for a time in the early 2000s, me and the band at the time moved up to Austin, and I lived off of close to Burnett and 2222, kind of that area, sort of central. And we had a couple of houses that lived up there and all lived in. And, we didn't have a living room. We had a rehearsal area.
Yeah, yeah.
My bedroom was part recording studio. We ran, all the mic lines and so on through the hallways to get... And we would practice and jam like four or five times a week. And, it was a crazy time, but very prolific. I remember it fondly, even though at the time it was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I was in college at the time, and I definitely had to, to go to local coffee shops to actually get any studying done because the environment at home was a little, unsettled, but it was fun.
Did you guys play when you lived in Austin at that point? Like, were you playing out? Shows? Were you guys playing?
I think the place we played the most often was Room 710 on Red River.
Yeah.
We also played, though, like Emo's, like Inside Stage, and we played places like Flamingo Cantina and Red Eye Fly and... we actually, one of our coolest shows, we got to play KUT's Eclecticos with John Ailey.
John Ailey, the late, great John Ailey.
Yeah, that was a really, that was an honor for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever I was on John's show, it would take me 45 seconds to match his tone, And I would just immediately be like, so John, this is what we were doing. We were making that, right? Oh my God. Super great. Glad. So, all right. So you play a multitude of instruments like guitars, keys, violin. I'm sure you play other stuff too. What did you start on?
I started on piano in the fourth grade about, and then the sixth grade, I picked up violin. And for a while I thought I might, be a professional musician of the classical variety. I actually started as a piano and violin performance major at University of Houston, but then I was corrupted by the rock and roll. And, I still enjoy classical music, but I've felt much more driven to write my own music. And, I was getting into a lot of the kind of 90s bands at the time
Bands were speaking to you at the time?
Pixies were a huge influence for sure. Stereolab, but I also, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, the kind of the grunge thing. And then, there was just a ton of bands, that I was listening to at the time and, finding inspiration from. Sonic Youth was another big one.
Yeah.
It's kind of reflected, I think, somewhat in our music at the time. It's a very diverse, those first couple records. And the second record that we had, it was called How to Fly a Washing Machine, is entirely composed of improvisations. Everything on there was 100% spontaneous. Cause I had a little studio in my bedroom and we'd have everything mic'd up. And a lot of times we would, before or after rehearsal, we would just jam. And then sometimes we would only jam and we would record a lot of it. And, I would take those things, kind of clean it up a little bit. Some of them would go down the track of eventually becoming a organized song, but others, for whatever reason that didn't happen, but we thought, something cool was captured in that moment. And so we put out that record, which is, pretty bold for your sophomore release, I guess. But it was where we were at the time. And, you know, I go back and I listen to that, and it's definitely not for everybody. You know, it's a niche audience for sure. But, you know, I go back and listen to it and think, you know, some of my most fulfilling musical moments happened at that time. Because, like I said, we were all living together and we were practicing all the time.
Right.
So we were kind of attuned to each other in a special way.
Yeah.
And the sort of the organic changes and evolutions that happened while we just were playing together in the moment were pretty special, at least to me. Again, sure. It might not be something that everybody can connect to as easily as, you know, some of our other material, but I like it.
Yeah. Were there any bands like in the jam world that spoke to you, like the From the Dead on? I mean, your music doesn't reflect any kind of doogie doogie doo doo doo.
No, not so much. I mean, we didn't do a lot of like traditional soloing or that kind of stuff that is often characteristic of jam bands. We just were more interested in, I don't know, I feel like, honestly, you know, stuff like Pink Floyd and Sonic Youth, something's in sort of in there, like Pink Floyd's early, like, Echoes, Umagumma, sort of more experimental stuff, along with some of the noisy Sonic Youth stuff. We fit kind of more in that realm as opposed to something like the Grateful Dead.
Right. What's the, this is a little bit off topic. There's another, I have an old friend. I lived here like in the late 80s and early 90s. And I was in a band that was managed by Fitzgeralds. And I did a lot of shows with a band called Sprawl, and Nick Cooper, you know him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like 6 degrees of Nick Cooper in this town.
Right.
But he has a collective now. What is his band called? You know what I'm talking about?
Wasn't he a writer for a while? Or am I thinking of somebody else? I thought he was a music writer. Maybe she's probably a musician as well.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Is this in Houston or in Austin?
It is in Houston. It is in Houston, yeah.
Is it the Free Radical?
Yes, it is. That's exactly right. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he does write as well. I was a little confused for a second because I thought you were talking about Austin, but yeah, I've definitely heard the name a lot, and I've seen Free Radicals a number of times. It's been a while. I don't think I've seen them since the pandemic. But yeah,
their thing is musically a lot different than you guys, but maybe the way the band is structured, maybe probably a lot the same.
Yeah, I've heard about him and the way he runs his band. It's been a while, like I said, but yeah, I think that's often kind of truer of that style, where you have more, a little bit more of a jazz influence and horn players and stuff, where it's kind of understood that, it's just whoever can sit in for this show kind of thing. I haven't really thought about it, but that's kind of what we do with this current band. We have our typical live lineup that is seen as sort of a core group, but, you know, I like reaching out to past collaborators, especially that original founding group.
Yeah.
But we also, like, we just did a couple of shows in Louisiana, and our current drummer, Kevin Radomski, who's great, had a longtime collaborator, Trip Walmsley, who's an amazing bassist, and he came in and just did great for us, filling in because our current bassist couldn't make those shows. He's also collaborating on a number of new song ideas as well, so... I don't know. I really enjoy getting a variety of ideas, and I don't like necessarily trying to, you know, have an album of a bunch of songs that sound really similar. I like having a pretty diverse sound on an album.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you do, I mean, like, you know, you have a solid amount of monthly listeners on your Spotify and stuff. Like, I go look at all that stuff, and I've seen, like, a lot of the gigs that you guys play, and just being able to get out of town and tour is a difficult thing for a band in this day and age. Like, you know,
Yeah, for a long time, though, it was difficult. I went back to school, went to law school, and then the pandemic happened. So it was like, for a while, we were only playing in Houston. But, you know, I'm past all that for the most part. And, now, you know, I recently purchased for us a new van. It has air conditioning now, which is some of our vehicles haven't had. And you know, I'm working with some people that are helping us book shows, and I've sort of set a number of things in place where it's become much more feasible for us to try to tour. Now, right now we're not looking at trying to do, you know, a big sustained.
No, you're
3 weeks of the East Coast. I mean, that would be fun, but I think honestly, it's better long term for us to try to become a regional band where we, it's great to play New York once, but if you just do that once every 3 years or something, that
you're
doesn't
not
really help
doing
you.
Anything. Right, right.
But if we can play Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio, you know, some places in Louisiana and Arkansas, and do that kind of on a rotation of every 3 or 4 months, that can actually start to build things.
Right.
So that's kind of the focus. We've done well in Houston. Most people, or a lot of people in the scene, so to speak, know of us, and we're trying to branch out again. And
sure,
you know, we played Austin on and off, obviously, for a while. We were regulars in Austin, but we're trying to reestablish that relationship with Austin, our home away from home.
Yeah. This will be out next Tuesday. So you guys are playing Thursday, February 2nd at the Mohawk in Austin. I think I'm going to come to that.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. It's going to be a great time. And actually, the original bassist for our band, Giuseppe Ponti, his new band, Austin-based band, Thanks Light, is going to be playing with us. So that'll be fun. And I'm trying to encourage him to come on stage for a couple of songs. We'll see.
It's funny, you know.
Well, I'm hoping that one.
When you're talking about like your touring strategy, I work with the Austin Music Foundation, which provides education and stuff. You know, like in Austin, we have a fucking. It's like there's an infrastructure for music like nobody's business there. I do a lot of consulting and stuff with bands, and a lot of them come in and they're like, oh yeah, we want to go to Chicago and play a show. And you just like, it's like, I always have to use this, and it's the younger the people get, the less they know the game Risk. But I'm like, you ever play the game Risk? Like, you don't fucking like start trying to take over the whole world. You get like your place together. Once you got enough armies and a stronghold, you go to the next place right next to you and fill that one up. And then once, like, basically, like, instead of worrying about Chicago, like, just figure out how you're going to get to Dallas, and then figure out how you're going to get to Oklahoma City and Tulsa and Kansas City, and then Chicago. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people don't think like that. It's definitely a lot smarter. And I notice a lot of people, I know I'm probably, I'm older than you are by some, but the logical career choice is to stay close to home and be able to have another way to make money.
It's hard enough to do in your hometown, and regionally, you know, it takes effort, and like I agree 100%. And we've done those things where we've done the one-off tour. Oh, let's go hit Colorado. That was fun, you know, but we haven't been back.
Yeah, no, yeah.
So, you know, I'd like to, but I have to think about what's sustainable.
Sure.
And we're, you know, in our 30s and 40s and, you know, have day jobs and whatnot. So it's, we're trying to build the band in a sustainable way. And like you said, it's only sustainable really for us to do, you know, a couple weekends a month, you know, hit this area, hit that area, and then sort of rotate it around and, you know, build it up. And, you know, we've been fortunate both this last record, we did get some good radio play from a number of regional outlets. We're also getting some, I think, some promotion for this upcoming show from some Austin outlets like KUT and Co-op. So, you know, we're trying to take a multi-pronged strategy of radio and press and everything that we can do, but make it sustainable, make it repeatable, and, you know, keep it growing.
What do you feel like when I saw that you had some success at college radio and stuff and getting stuff played on there? And I know KUTX as a radio station has a, you know, nothing against co-op's fucking great. It's amazing. But KUTX has a building of its own, like a giant thing. And right. It's got like, you know, like it reaches a lot of people. Do you notice, like in this day and age in 2023, what does it mean to have a song that gets played on radio stations? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's, you know, it's different than, you know, the 1990s for sure, because the way people consume music has shifted so dramatically towards streaming and so on. But to me, it's still important. You know, first of all, there are still a substantial number of people that listen. It's not what it was, but it's still substantial. And then a lot of those people are more likely than not to be plugged into the local music scene. People who listen to
KUTX music.
And those are people who are more likely to come to shows. And, you know, there's a lot of overlap between the people who are involved in radio programs and go to shows and write music press and all the kind of different, elements that you need to be aware of and be developing as part of, you know, being a musician that wants to, you know, get your music out there. Yeah. So I think radio is still a key component, maybe not as much as it was, but we're you know, I'm also just nostalgic. It's just cool to have your song on the radio.
Fuck yeah, it is. Yeah, totally.
we were Harbor has been the most successful we've ever been with radio. And, we got, you know, on a number of national charts. We were like, the third most downloaded album in college radio in early August. And we got on a number of charts and even broke into a number of commercial rock radio stations, in a few markets.
Wow,
that was, yeah.
How
yeah,
so. did you get like a radio promoter? Like you hired a publicist? Yeah.
Yeah. We worked with a group called Team Claremont that, I believe they're out of Athens, Georgia, maybe.
Sure.
We were really happy with their efforts. They worked hard for us and, you know, super professional and they seemed to genuinely love and believe in the RIP music. And, we got, you know, all across the country. Some markets were easier than others for them, but, you know, I felt like they were always very upfront and honest and hardworking. And like I said, they, you know, we were in the NACC top 200 chart for like a month straight or more. And, you know, it was super cool to see our name next to, some artists that we really respected.
Yeah.
So, we had a good experience working with them and would recommend that other people do the same. You know, and we've also been working with an Austin based, group called, Juice Consulting.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did an excellent job for us in terms of promoting, our release show in Houston and, you know, the various regional, opportunities. So, you know, it's a learning process. Some things work better than others. So, you know, it's an ever evolving landscape for sure.
Totally.
You know, what worked 20 years ago is not necessarily going to work today, but you know, some of it will.
Yeah.
So, keep evolving with the times.
Well, I think it's great. It's nice to see a band like you can tell that you're the ages that you are because you guys are approaching this like in a really pragmatic way, like this very thoughtful and not a lot of time and money wasted for no reason because you've got lives as well, but you still want to rock.
Yeah. You know, there's definitely some times where money gets wasted. But we try to minimize those. Those are the ones where it's like, okay, we'll learn from that one. Yeah. And try to reallocate those funds on the next record or next cycle of promotion. But, you know, that's going to happen. But, you know, and one of the realizations I've had is, you know, I like you said, well, several, but since I was much younger, in my 20s, you know, I did try to do some of those. Hey, let's go there because it sounds cool to play. But so playing closer to home is definitely one of them. But another one is that I just love playing live and I love doing music. And I have to kind of accept the wins, you know, for a long time. Enough. Even if I had some success, it was like, but it wasn't this other thing. So I'm depressed. Right, and
Now,
even if it's a relatively small venue, but we have like 40 people who are totally like locked in and with us in the moment, that's a huge rush and awesome experience. And I guess, discount that because it wasn't, you know, 1,000 people or whatever, you know, fine.
Are you guys playing inside at the Mohawk?
Yes.
Yeah. And then Saturday, just real quick, I'm going to let people know Saturday, February 4th, you'll be at the 101 in Bryan, the exploding metropolis of Bryan, Texas. Fabulous place.
That's right.
I've been playing for decades.
Yeah, we've been playing Bryan quite a lot. And that's, you know, it's a good, reasonable, just hour or so drive from where we are in Houston. They've got a really supportive little scene there. We were really close friends with a band called Ex-Optimists that's based in, unfortunately, they've dispersed a little bit, although I do think they're going to play some reunion shows, but they helped organize a lot of the local kind of indie music infrastructure. They had a cool zine, they put on some music festivals, and we became really close with them. And played a lot of good shows with those guys. Unfortunately, one of the venues we really liked, the Rev, they didn't survive the pandemic, but I think some of those people put together the 101, which is, they sort of retrofitted an old gas station.
Oh, cool.
And a cool little venue that's, you know, we often try to hit first Fridays there, and then, you know, there's often a good group that comes out and is really, really happy to have, you know, some quality independent music.
Yeah. I think that I find that, I remember, like, and you probably do too, like when you were first playing, I don't know if you remember the dawn of the internet, but like when websites first became possible, then people are like, oh fuck, man, you're going to be unstoppable. You're going to sell millions of records. Everyone can find you, but it just, everyone has to be looking for you at the same time. But it seems like the structure that you guys have, like at this point really works. Like it really, like what you're doing is working. it's very rare to see that happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's rare to experience because we've definitely had some dry spells.
I know the feeling.
You know, but yeah, like I feel like a lot of factors have come together, you know, for a while I went through some crazy stuff personally and, you know, and then switched careers and stuff and was in school and pandemic. So there was a lot of things that were unsettled where I was not in a position to be able to make a sustained, focused effort on music. I just could kind of do it here and there, you know, it would be me and Dan on Zoom mixing a song off Harbor or something, you know, but 2 years before it would come out, you know, cause it took a while because there was so much going on.
Sure.
That was a source of distraction. But, you know, I've got a really good group of people that I'm super close friends with that are the current performing members. Yeah. And then all like some of the past members I've reconnected with, and we're working on a new album. And that was super fun. We recently went into the studio to record drums and bass, and that was really, really productive. And you know, I've got some other partners with Juice and Team Claremont. Another person I'm working with, Marigold Clark. She's actually in the Austin-based band J Satellite. she's been helping us with booking shows and stuff. And some of the, you know, some of the logistical details that I find less pleasant. So, you know, everything's kind of come together in a good way. And, the wheels are working.
Yeah. And it works out. I mean, like you spend enough time doing, that kind of work working. Like when you go to play music, you don't want to spend that time booking.
Exactly. You know, I there are certain things I don't mind doing, other things I find really tedious. So, having some help, and on those fronts is really nice. I'm willing to do it. And I have done a lot of the different business aspects of being in a band, but, getting help on those fronts and, sure, and people that like and trust and believe in the music is really helpful.
Sure.
So,
yeah, man. You're also, Friday, February 17th, you'll also be at Continental Club here in Houston, one of my favorite places.
Yes. Continental, we played that venue quite a few times and always have a great time. And it's kind of a sister venue right next door.
Yeah.
Shoeshine Charlie Big Top Lounge. We played there last month, and we've got another show. This might come out afterwards, but, we've got a show this Friday at Wonky Power in Houston. It's run by the same people who run Axelrad, which is a really cool music venue. And the Wonky Power people have a lot of cool things going on in Houston. They've really come up with a cool infrastructure to support a lot of independent music.
Yeah. So. Did you ever used to play Fitzgerald's?
Oh, all the time. Man. It's such a sad tragedy.
I've gone by the parking lot a couple times.
Yeah, it's really sad what happened. Yeah. You know, if I had the money somehow, I would have tried to save that. I mean, honestly, I think one of my very first shows that I ever played, I think it actually literally was the first show that I played in terms of having a full original rock band, was downstairs at Fitzgerald's back when it was called Zelda's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, baby.
You know, it was a great experience. And I think, honestly, that is the venue we've played more than any other single venue. And, you know, it was great. And the people who currently run White Up Music Hall, were running Fitzgerald's for a while. And they, you know, they did a great job.
They did.
And really into a cool venue that attracted a lot of great bands. But, you know, I know those people. Actually worked at White Up Music Hall while I was in law school for a bit. And, you know, just the infrastructure, it sounded like it was going to be more expensive to fix the place than to just build a new venue. So that's what they did. Yeah. You know, so it's sad, but, it's, I guess just, you know, part of the evolution.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of cool new venues. Like I said, we played a cool new place in Spring Branch, which is sort of Northwest Houston, called 1810 Ojiman. And, I liked that place. Like I said, Axelrad, Wonky Power are relatively new and really, really cool.
Yeah.
And then we've got our longtime staples like, Continental Club,
yeah,
which is always a fun place to play.
I'm in this band called Skyrocket. We play Continental Club for a long time, and sadly, just we'd have to do two nights to do what we do at the last concert in one night. I mean, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a sad move because I really like the Last Concert Cafe, but there was something so homey about Continental Club here. There's just something so great about that room. It's always those rooms when you walk in and you're like, oh fuck, you know what I mean? Like shit's held together with tape and stuff. And you're like, this is not gonna happen, dude. And then that ends up being like the magic place, you know, like the front room with the hole in the wall. There's no reason why that fucking room. I should have had all my biggest, most transcendent musical experiences playing music on that stage, like running sound myself because the fucking thing's right next to you. You know what I mean?
We just played a show like that at Big Top, the next door to.
Yeah.
On Intel, we had where their usual mixing board was, you know, in the shop, and so it was just this kind of practice room PA that exactly. They brought in, powered amplifier.
Just
ahead. I was running it myself. yeah. And there were some issues, you know, but we got through them. But you know, the crowd was great. We had like, you know, it's a pretty small room, but we had like 50 or 60 people that were just completely 100% into it. And the other bands were great too.
Yeah.
A band called Galveston and then some good friends of ours, in Darwin's Finches, another really great band. And, you know, it was a great night. And then there was this random street magician that came in and just blew our minds as we were drinking after the show. So it was a fun night.
That's amazing. Can I ask you, what kind of law do you practice?
Well, I do, just kind of general business law, like litigation.
Sure.
And then I also do some appellate work. I'm actually working with, a lot of lawyers based in Austin from our firm, for the appellate side of things. But that's kind of the stuff that pays the bills, but I also do quite a bit of pro bono stuff, and I've focused most of that effort on immigration law, because in law school I was part of the immigration clinic, and okay. I thought I might do immigration once upon a time. And in fact, I got an internship at a good immigration law firm, but that's when COVID hit and the, you know, literally immigration stopped cold completely. So they're like, well, we don't really need you because we literally are doing nothing. So, you know, that path didn't materialize, but I'm using a lot of that clinic experience in helping a number of clients. So I just recently helped a guy get a green card, which is a shockingly
difficult thing.
Crazy thing to do. And I've helped some other people, like a couple families from Afghanistan. I'm trying to help get them what's called humanitarian parole, to get over to the United States.
Yeah.
And helped this woman get out of a frivolous defamation case. I like the pro bono side, because once upon a time I was inspired by Ralph Nader and wanted to be a public institution attorney. And you know, part of me wants to do that, but the other, you know, there's part of me that wants, you know, a little bit of funds because, you know,
you can't be like a free lawyer and a musician and expect to eat at the end of the day.
So I feel like I found, at least for now, a nice balance. Well, hopefully, you know, hopefully it'll last for a while, but right now I'm trying to make the most of it.
Dude, that's great, man. It's you're a good example for young musicians coming up to sort of like adjust your expectations of what you're going to get out of this fucking thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, every album you put out is like, you know, a lottery ticket. It's possible it could explode, but there are a ton of amazing bands that, you know, it's never going to happen. It doesn't happen, you know? Yeah. So it's the way the music infrastructure is right now, I think. In some ways easier, in some ways harder, but you know, what you can do is get together a group of people that you love making music with and put on great shows, and people will be drawn to it.
Sure.
You know, like I said, if you play a great show to 40 people who are totally like locked in and vibing off the music and having a great time, that's a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, there was a time in my life where I was like, yeah, but we should be playing, you know, to bigger audiences already. It's been a whole year and we're still playing. I've found that's the wrong mindset. And it made me unhappy. And I know I'm much happier just understanding that having these moments where, you know, the music comes together and the people come together and you have just a great experience that's born out of your own music. That's a wonderful thing.
That is a wonderful thing. Yeah, man. All right. Well, hopefully I'll see you on Thursday, February 2nd at the Mohawk in Austin. And tell Kevin I said hi. Tell Dan Workman I said hi.
Will do.
I still loved my that conversation that I had. It was so weird. It was like backstage at the House of Blues in a different, like they had to give us a special one because my band is like a 7-person band and there was no way that was going to happen. So,
right.
Yeah. But, dude, it's been really great talking to you. And this Record Harbor is fantastic. People can find you guys at thewheelworkers.com, also on all of the social media things. And they can find you got a really great Bandcamp there. And,
yep.
Yeah.
Good Bandcamp and all the streaming channels and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Well, Steven, this has been great talking to you, man. And, I look forward to meeting you on Thursday.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me.
Have a great one, buddy. That was Steven Higginbotham from The Wheelworkers. Their album, Harbor, out now. Get it wherever it is you stream and download music. Find them at thewheelworkers.com. If you live in Austin, they will be here this Thursday, February 2nd, at the Mohawk. At the Mohawk, baby, I'll be there. Saturday, February 4th, they'll be at the 101 in Bryan. Friday, February 17th, they'll be at the Continental Club in Houston. As I said, go to thewheelworkers.com for all of your The Wheelworkers needs. All right. And hey, gang, don't forget when you're out there checking out the Wheelworkers, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is you can find podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher. Follow us. Leave us some stars. Leave a comment if you can. Tell us how we're doing. You can follow us on Facebook at that's How Did I Get Here on Facebook. And you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. That's at Johnny Gowdy. Do it, man. Follow us. Here's some more music. This is the song SOS from the band The Wheelworkers and their latest album, Harbor. Let's get down.
solos.
Bonjour tout le monde.
Hello from the children of planet Earth.